Maine with Dr. Cates. Mr. Azell is to be granted supervised visitation. The attorney shot to his feet. But, Your Honor, that's my ruling, Counselor. We're going to proceed with the utmost care here. This child has already suffered enough. And I'm sure your client only wants what's best for his daughter. She hit the bench with her gavel. Next case. It took Julia a moment to process what had just happened. She still had custody of Alice, for now at least. She heard John talking to Ellie about the logistics of visitation. Julia knew all that. She couldn't count the number of times she'd been appointed guardian ad litem to protect a child's interests. She eased away from the desk and started to leave the courtroom. In the back, by the doors, she saw Max waiting for her. Then someone grabbed her arm. The grip was a little too tight. George Azell pulled her aside. His Hollywood smile was gone, watered down now by failure. In his eyes was a sadness she hadn't expected.
I need to see her.
She had no choice but to agree. Tomorrow. But I won't tell her who you are. She wouldn't understand anyway. We're at 1617 River Road. Be there at 1. She pulled free of his arm and began to walk away. He grabbed her again. She looked down at his long, tanned fingers, wrapped possessively around her bicep. He was a man used to taking what he wanted. He didn't care much about crossing personal space boundaries, either. Release me, Mr. Azell. He complied instantly. She expected him to back away. Cowards who were called out usually did, and men who beat their wives were always cowards and bullies. But he didn't. He stood there, towering over her, and yet cowed somehow, bent.
How is she?
He asked finally. She would have sworn there was a fissure in his voice, that the words hurt him to say. Murderers and sociopaths were often great actors, she reminded herself. It's about time you asked that.
You think you know me, Dr. Cates? The whole world does.
He backed away, sighing, shoving a hand through his hair and pulling his ponytail free.
Christ! I'm tired of fighting a war I can't win. So just tell me, how's my daughter? What the hell does developmentally delayed mean?
She's been through hell, but she's coming through. She's a tough, loving little girl who needs a lot of therapy and stability.
And you think I'm unstable?
As you've pointed out, I don't know you. She reached into her briefcase and withdrew a stack of videocassette tapes, which she handed to him. I made these for you. They're tapes of our sessions. They will answer some of your questions. He took them cautiously, as if he were afraid the black plastic would burn him.
Where has she been?
He finally asked. This time his voice was velvety soft. She was reminded of his Louisiana roots. According to the trial transcripts, he'd been raised dirt poor in the bayou. We don't know. Somewhere in the woods, we think. Julia wouldn't let herself be fooled by the concern in his voice. He was playing her. She was sure of it. He wanted her to think he was a victim in this, too. But I suspect you know that. Ellie came up beside Julia, touched her arm. Everything okay? Mr. Azell was finally asking about Alice.
Call me George, and her Brittany.
Julia flinched at the reminder. She's been Alice to us for a long time.
About that,
he looked at both of them.
I want to thank you both for taking such good care of her. You literally saved her life.
Yes, we did, Julia said. I'll see you tomorrow at 1, Mr. Azell. promptly. Julia nodded and walked away. It was a moment before she realized that Ellie hadn't followed her. She glanced back. George and Ellie were talking. Peanut came up to her, nodded back toward Ellie and George.
"That's trouble," she said, crossing her arms. "Your sister can turn to jello around a good-looking man."
"I hope not," Julia said, feeling exhausted suddenly. "But maybe you should go eavesdrop."
"Glad to," Peanut said, and she was off.
Sighing, Julia walked to Max, who was waiting for her at the back door. 23. Mid-afternoon sunlight, as uncertain as tomorrow, shone through the small barred window and landed in a puddle on the hardwood floor. The girl on the narrow twin bed whined like any other child at nap time.
"No sleep. Read."
From his place just outside the bedroom door, Max heard Julia say, "Not now, honey. Sleep." Very quietly, she began to sing a song that Max couldn't quite hear. It made him recall another life. In that one, the woman sitting on the bed would have had dark brown hair, and the child would be a boy named Danny.
"One more story," he would have said,
that little boy they'd called One More Dan and Dan the Man. Max went downstairs. In the kitchen, he rifled through the cupboards until he found coffee. Making a pot, he then returned to the living room and made a fire. He was on his second cup of coffee when Julia finally came downstairs. She looked worn. He would have sworn her cheeks were streaked by tears. He wanted to go to her, hold her in the way she'd held Alice, and promise her that everything would be okay, but she looked too fragile to be touched.
"Can I get you a cup of coffee?" he said instead.
Coffee would be great. Lots of milk and sugar. He went to the kitchen, poured another cup of coffee, doctored it for her, and returned. She was sitting on the hearth with her back to the fire. Her blonde hair had come free from the twist she'd had it in. Now, pale tendrils fell around her face. The area below her eyes was puffy and shadowed. Her lips were pale.
"Here."
He handed her the coffee. She gave him a fleeting look, a flashing smile. "Thanks." He sat down on the floor in front of her. "I want him to be guilty."
"Do you? Really?"
Her face crumbled at that. She sighed and shook her head. "How can I want it?" she whispered. "It would make her dad a monster. No child deserves that. As her doctor, I want him to be a loving parent, wrongly convicted. As her mother," she sighed. He had no words to give her. They both knew that either way, Alice, Brittany, would be wounded. She would either lose the woman who'd become her mother, or be taken away from her biological father. Maybe that wouldn't hurt her now, when she couldn't understand what it meant, but someday she'd feel the loss. She might even blame Julia for it.
"She needs you. That's all I know. And you need her."
Julia's gaze met his. She slid off the hearth and knelt in front of him. "I want to wake up and find that this was all a bad dream."
"I know."
She leaned forward and kissed him. He felt turned inside out by that kiss. Broken. Now that he'd started feeling again, he couldn't stop. Didn't want to. He drew back just enough to look at her and whispered,
"All."
At her frown, he said, "You told me once I could have all or nothing from you. I choose all." She tried to smile. "It took you long enough." When girl wakes up, she goes to the window and stands there, staring out at the yard. She loves these new words, especially when she adds "my" in front of it. This word means something is hers. There are hundreds of birds in her yard right now, though not so many as there will be when the snow is gone and the sun is hot again. Down below, lying on top of the melting snow, is a pink flower. Maybe she should bring it inside. That would make Julie smile, maybe, and Julie needs to smile more. She tries not to think about that, but already it is too late. She is remembering last night, when Julie held Girl so tightly she had to push her away, and how Julie's eyes had watered at that. Lately, Julie's eyes water all the time. This is a bad thing. Girl knows this. Although it now seems long ago that Girl was in the deep forest, she sometimes remembers him and her. Hers eyes watered more and more, and then one day she was dead. The memory of it is terrifying. Before, in days past, Girl would have howled now, called out to her friends in the deep woods. Use your words. This is what she must do now. Using her words is a good thing that makes Julie happy. But which words? And how can she put them together? How can she tell Julie how it feels to be warm, to not be afraid anymore? These words are too big. Too many are needed. Maybe she'll just hold Julie extra tightly tonight and kiss her cheek. She loves it when Julie does that to Girl at bedtime. It is like a bit of magic that makes Girl dream of the pretty things in her yard, instead of how she used to sleep in her cave, freezing cold and all alone. She hears the door to the bedroom open and close. Hears footsteps. You've been standing at that window a long time, Alice. What do you see? Is that a bad thing? There are so many rules in this place, sometimes she can't remember them all. She turns to Julie, who looks like a princess in one of the books they read. Still, Girl can see the water trails on Julie's cheeks, and it makes her feel sad inside, like the rabbit who'd been forgotten by his little boy in the story. Bad? She wonders. No window stand? Julie smiles, and just like that, Girl feels happy again. You can stand there all day if you like. She goes to the bed she sleeps in and sits down, putting her legs out on top of the covers.
Book time?
Girl hopes, reaching for the story from last night. Grabbing it, she rushes over to the bed.
Teeth first?
She says, proud of herself for remembering. It is hard to think of such things at story time. And pajamas. Girl nods. She can do it all. Go potty, brush her teeth, and put on the pink jammies with the stiff white feet. Then she is on the bed beside Julie, tucked in close. Julie pulls her sideways, settles Girl on her lap, so they are nose to nose. Girl giggles, waiting for kisses. But Julie doesn't do that. She doesn't smile. Instead, very softly, she says, Brittany. The word hits Girl hard. It is what him used to say when he was mean and wobbly from the stuff he used to drink. What does Julie mean? Girl feels the panic growing inside her. She scratches her cheek and shakes her head. Julie holds Girl's hands in hers and says it again. Brittany. This time Girl hears the question in the word. Julie is asking her something. Are you Brittany? Had those other words been there all along, only drowned out by a Girl's heartbeat? Are you Brittany? Brittany. The question is like a fish swimming downstream. She grabs onto its tail, swims with it. She gets an image of a little girl, tiny, with short, curly black hair and huge white plastic underwear. This baby lives in a white world, with lights everywhere and a soft floor. She plays with a bright red plastic ball. Someone always gives it back to her when she drops it. Where's Brittany's ball? Where is it? She looks at Julie, who is so sad now it makes girl's heart hurt. How can girl tell her how happy she is here, how this is her whole world now, and nothing else feels right? Are you Brittany? She understands, finally. Are you Brittany? Very slowly she leans toward Julie, gives her a kiss. When she pulls back, she says,
Me, Alice.
Oh, honey.
Julie's eyes started leaking again. She seems to shrink. She pulls her into her arms, holding her so tightly that Alice can hardly breathe. But she laughs anyway.
I love you, Alice.
She says it again just because she can, and because it makes her feel like she can fly. She isn't just girl anymore.
Me, Alice.
At her desk in the station house, Ellie stared down at the huge array of papers spread out in front of her. The tiny black letters swarmed the pages, blurred. She shoved the pile aside, feeling a ridiculous satisfaction when the papers fluttered to the floor. She got up from her desk and left her office. There, alone amidst the empty desks and quiet phones, she paced back and forth. Back and forth. What now? All of their investigations had led them nowhere. There was no way they could convince the court that George Azell was an unfit parent. Julia and Alice were going to lose. Ellie went to the secret cabinet in the back room and grabbed a bottle of scotch, so old it had once belonged to her uncle. Thanks, Joey, she said, nodding as she poured herself a drink. At the last minute, she decided to take the bottle back with her. Switching on the light, she sat down at her desk in the main room and sipped her drink.
What now?
It kept coming back to that, like bits of flotsam circling a drain. She was just pouring another drink when the door opened. He stood there, wearing faded designer jeans and a black suede shirt that was open just enough to reveal a triangle of thick black chest hair.
Chief Baden, he said, stepping in. I saw the light on.
It is the police station.
Ah, so you're always here at midnight, are you? And drinking?
These are hardly ordinary times. He nodded toward the bottle.
Do you have a second glass?
Sure. It wasn't exactly professional, but she was off duty, and right now she didn't care. She went into the kitchen, got him a glass and ice, and returned to her desk. In her absence, he dragged a chair over to sit across from her. She handed him the glass. The ice clinked against the sides. She studied him closely, noticing the shadows beneath his eyes that told of sleepless nights, the thin strips of scarring that lined the inside of his left wrist. Sometime, long ago, he'd tried to kill himself.
I love her, you know, regardless of what you think you've learned from all those reports on the floor.
His words struck her deeply, found a soft place to land. They were compelling, no doubt as he'd intended. She leaned back from him, needing distance between them. Tell me about your marriage. He gave a negligent flick of the wrist. The movement was strangely seductive. She was reminded of some rich, idle lord of the realm.
It was terrible. She slept around, I slept around. We fought like crazy people. She wanted a divorce. It would have been my third.
He smiled disarmingly.
I'm a romantic in my way.
Ellie knew about that kind of faith. A believer, she thought, like me. She pushed that comparison away. And where is your wife now?
I don't know. If you're wondering why I sound so emotionless when I answer, remember that I've been answering that question for years. No one ever likes my answer. I thought she took Brittany and ran off with some new man.
Ellie watched him talk. There was something deeply seductive about him. Maybe it was in the tone of his voice, so soft and confident, or the way his lilting accent made every word sound carefully considered. Did you testify in your own defense?
Course not. The lawyers said there was too much to cross-examine me on. I wanted to. I would have been convincing, too. I thought about that a lot in prison. Regrets keep you company in there. I paid a fortune to private investigators. The best lead came from that flower delivery man who reported seeing a man in a yellow slicker and Batman baseball cap sitting in a van across the street from my house.
And?
And we never found him.
So you wish you would have testified?
I didn't know how it would stay with me. People think I'm a monster.
Is that why you're here? To use Brittany, to prove your innocence? He gazed at her. There was no smile on his face now, no hint of it in his eyes. He looked as honest as a man with a deeply troubled past could look.
When the world sees that she's alive, they'll have to question all of it.
But she's already been so hurt.
Ah,
he said quietly, sadly.
So have I.
But she's a child.
My child,
he reminded her. And at that, she saw past the regret, past the sadness, to a wounded man who would do anything to have his way. I don't think you understand how traumatized she's been. When we found her, she was practically wild. She couldn't talk or...
I've read the newspaper accounts and watched the tapes. Why do you think I'm talking to you? I know your sister saved Brittany, but she's my daughter. You have to know what that means. I'll get the best help for her, I promise you.
My sister is the best. That's what I'm trying to tell you. If you love Alice... He stood up.
I should leave now. I thought if you knew how much I love my daughter, you'd be a cop. But you're Julia's sister, aren't you? This is one more place I won't find justice.
Ellie knew she'd gone too far in questioning his love for his daughter. You'll ruin her, she said quietly.
I'm sorry you feel that way, Chief Barton. I truly am.
He walked over to the door, yanked it open. Then he paused, looked back.
I'll see you and Brittany tomorrow.
Ellie let out her breath in a sigh. His words, I thought you'd be a cop, stayed with her for a long, long time. In all the tussle of facts and emotions and fear of the past few days, she'd been focused on Alice and Julia. She'd forgotten that she had a job to do. She was the chief of police. Justice was her job. The night for Julia was endless. Finally, sometime around 3 o'clock, she gave up on sleep and went to work. For hours, she sat at the kitchen table, in the glow from a single lamp, reading about George Azel. His life was a web of innuendo and speculation. Nothing had ever been proven. Pushing the papers aside in frustration, she put on her jogging clothes and went outside, hoping the cool air would clear her head. She would need her wits about her today. She ran for miles, down one road, up another, until she was aching and out of breath. Finally, near dawn, she found herself back on her own driveway, coming home. She went to her father's favorite fishing spot and stood there, breathing hard, watching sunlight creep over the treetops. Though the world was inky dark and freezing cold, she could remember how it had felt to be here in the summer with him, how his big, calloused hand had swallowed her smaller one, and how protected she'd felt by that. She heard footsteps behind her. Hey, Ellie said, coming up beside her. You're up early. She handed Julia a cup of coffee. Couldn't sleep. She took the mug, wrapped her fingers around the warm porcelain. In silence, they stared across the silvered field to the black forest beyond. Cal's house was a twinkling of golden lights in the early morning mist.
He's going to get custody, Jules.
I know. Julia stared down at the river, watching the pink dawn light its surface.
We need to prove him guilty.
She paused.
Or innocent.
You watch too much CSI. The state spent millions and they couldn't prove it.
We have Alice.
Julia felt a shiver run down her spine. Slowly she turned to face her sister. She doesn't remember anything. Or she can't tell us, anyway.
Maybe she could lead us back to where she was kept or held. Lead us back.
You mean, my God, Ellie, can you imagine what that could do to her?
We might find evidence.
But Elle, she could snap, go back into herself again. How could I live with that?
How traumatized is she going to be when Azel takes her away? Will she ever understand that you didn't abandon her?
Julia closed her eyes. This was precisely the image that stalked her. If Alice felt abandoned again, she might simply fade back into silence, and next time there might be no escape.
I've thought it through from every angle. I was up all night. This is my job, Jules. I have to follow the facts. If we want to know the truth, this is our only hope.
Julia crossed her arms as if that simple movement could ward off this deepening chill. She walked away from her sister.
Ellie didn't understand what her proposal could mean, how fragile a child's mind could be, how quickly things could turn tragic.
But Julia knew. She'd seen it happen in Silverwood. Ellie came up behind her.
Jules?
I don't think I could survive if Alice cracked again.
All roads lead to Rome, Ellie said quietly.
Julia turned to her. What do you mean?
No matter what we do, or how we do it, Alice gets hurt. No child should grow up without a father, but losing you would be worse. You've got to trust my instincts on this. We need to know. To that, there was no answer.
Ellie put her arm around Julia and pulled her close.
Come on,
Ellie finally said.
Let's go make our girl breakfast.
Max was getting out of the shower when he heard the doorbell ring. He toweled off, put on an old pair of Levi's, and went downstairs. I'm coming. He opened the door. Julia stood there. He could see how hard she was trying to smile.
Ellie wants to take Alice into the woods to see if...
Her voice wavered.
If she can find...
He pulled her into his arms and held her until she stopped trembling. Then he led her into the living room. On the sofa, he once again took her in his arms.
What do I do?
He touched her face gently. You already know the answer to that. It's why you've been crying. He wiped the tears from her cheeks.
She could regress. Or worse.
And what will she do if Azel gets custody? She started to say something, then paused, drawing in a deep breath. In the silence that followed, he said, This is the time to be her mother, not her doctor.
She looked up at him. How is it you always know what to say to me?
He tried to glance away, couldn't. Very slowly he pulled away from her and went upstairs. On the bureau he found what he was looking for, a 5x7 framed photograph of a little boy in a baseball uniform, smiling for the camera. His two front teeth were missing. He took the picture downstairs and resettled himself on the couch.
Julia sat up, alarmed. Max? What is it? You look...
He handed her the picture. That's Danny.
Frowning, she studied the small, shining face, then looked at Max again, waiting.
He was my son.
She drew in a sharp breath. Was?
That's the last picture we have of him. A week later, a drunk driver hit us on the way home from a game.
Her eyes filled with tears. The sight of it should have broken him, plunged him into his loss, but instead it strengthened him. It was the first time he'd said Danny's name out loud in years, and it felt good.
I would do anything.
He stared down at her, not caring that his voice was breaking or that his eyes were watering.
Anything. To have one more day with him.
Julia looked at the picture for a long time, then slowly she nodded in understanding. I love you, Max. He took her in his arms and held her tightly.
And I love you.
He said it so quietly that he wondered if she'd heard, or if he'd only imagined the words. Then he looked in her eyes and he knew she'd heard him. Someday, you'll tell me about him, about Danny, she said. He leaned down to kiss her.
Yeah, someday.
24. Alice, honey, are you listening to me?
Read, Alice.
We're not going to read right now. Remember what we talked about this morning? And again at lunchtime? Julia tried to keep her voice even. A man is coming to see Alice.
No, play Julie.
Julia stood up. Well, I'm going downstairs. You can stay up here by yourself if you like. Alice immediately made a whimpering sound.
No, leave.
She got up from her chair and raced to Julia's side, tucking a hand into her skirt pocket. Julia's heart swelled painfully.
Come on, she said quietly.
Down the stairs they went, side by side, Alice's hand tucked firmly in Julia's skirt. Ellie was standing by the fire, apparently reading the newspaper. Unfortunately, it was upside down.
Hey,
she said, looking up at their entrance. Though she wore full makeup and had curled her hair, she still looked tired somehow and scared.
Hi, Lily,
Alice said, pulling Julia toward her sister.
Read, Alice?
Ellie smiled. The kid's like a bloodhound on the scent, she ruffled Alice's black hair. Later. Julia dropped to her knees and stared at Alice, who was smiling brightly.
Read now?
When the man comes, you don't need to be scared. I'm right here. So is Ellie. You're safe. Alice frowned. The doorbell rang. At the sound, Julia almost jumped out of her skin. Upstairs, the dogs, who were barricaded in Ellie's bedroom, went crazy, jumping and barking. Julia slowly rose. Ellie walked toward the door. She paused for only a moment, long enough to straighten her shoulders, then opened it. George Azel stood there, holding a huge, stuffed teddy bear.
Hi, Chief Barton, he said, trying to look past her.
Ellie stepped aside. Julia watched it all as if from far away. She felt like a ghost in the room, recently dead, watching her family gather after her funeral. Everything was quiet and slow. No one knew quite what to do or say. He stepped past Ellie and came into the living room. His curly black hair had been pulled back into a ponytail again. He wore ordinary Levi's and an expensive white shirt, with the sleeves rolled up to just below his elbows. Looking at them now, in the same room, the man with the dark curly hair and the chiseled face, and the little girl who was his carbon copy. There was no mistaking the link between them. He stepped forward, letting the teddy bear slide down his hip. He held it negligently by one arm.
"Brittany,"
he said the name softly. There was no mistaking the wonder in his voice. Alice slid behind Julia. "It's okay, Alice," Julia said, trying to ease away from her, but Alice wouldn't let her go. "She's got a strong will," Julia said to him. "She doesn't like to be away from me."
"She gets her stubbornness from me," he said.
For the next hour, they were like some terrible tableau in a French film. In the beginning, George tried to communicate with his daughter, talking about nothing, making no sudden moves, but none of it worked. Even reading aloud didn't draw Alice out. At some point, she streaked over to the potted plants and crouched there, watching him through the green, waxy leaves.
"She has no idea who I am," he finally said, closing the book, tossing it aside.
"It's been a long time." He got up, began to pace the room. Then, on a dime, he stopped and turned to Julia.
"Does she talk at all?"
"She's learning."
"How will she tell people what happened to her?"
"Is that what matters most to you?"
"Fuck you,"
he said. But the words held no sting, were, in fact, kind of desperate sounding. He went around the couch and moved toward the potted plants. He moved cautiously, as if he were approaching a wild and dangerous animal. A low growling came from the leaves. "That means she's scared," Ellie said from the kitchen. Upstairs, the dogs began to howl. George was less than 5 feet from the plants now. Squatting down, he was almost eye level with his daughter. Long moments passed like this, with him silent and frowning, his daughter growling in fear. Finally, he reached out to touch Alice. She threw herself backwards so hard she could have been hurt. A plant fell over, crashed to the floor. He immediately pulled his hand back.
"Sorry, I didn't mean to scare you."
Alice crouched on all fours, staring up at him through an opening in the leaves, breathing hard. George took a deep breath, let it out slowly. Julia heard his resignation. It was over, at least for the day. Thank God. Maybe he'd give up. He surprised her by starting to sing, "Twinkle, twinkle, little star." It was Julia's turn to draw in a sharp breath. His voice was beautiful and true. Alice stilled. As the song went on, repeating, she sat back on her heels, then got to her feet. Cautiously, she neared the plants and started humming along with him.
"You know me, don't you, Brittany?"
At that, the name Brittany, Alice spun away and ran upstairs. The bedroom door slammed shut. George got to his feet. Shoving his hands in his pockets, he looked at Julia.
"I used to sing that song to her when she was a baby."
He came closer. Julia was going to say something when she heard a car drive up. "Who's here, Elle?" Ellie went to the front door, opened it. "Holy shit!" She slammed the door shut and turned around. "It's KIRO-TV and CNN and the Gazette!" Julia looked at George. "You called the press?" He shrugged.
"You spend 3 years in prison, doctor, and then judge me. I'm as much a victim here as Brittany is."
"Tell it to someone who'll believe you, you selfish son of a bitch!" She tried to rein in her anger. It wouldn't do any good to scream at him with the press right there. "You've seen her. Becoming the object of media attention could destroy her. You and I know what it's like when they make you the story. There's nowhere to hide. Don't do that to Alice.
Brittany.
His gaze softened. She thought she saw true concern in his eyes, or hoped she did. It was all she had to seize on.
And you've left me no other choice.
The doorbell rang.
Do you really want to prove your innocence?
Julia said, hearing the desperate edge in her voice. As she said it, she thought, God help me. God help her. Then she looked at her sister, who nodded in understanding.
I've spent a fortune trying to prove it.
Ellie pushed away from the kitchen counter.
You have something you didn't have before.
A small-town police chief on the case? That's not gonna cut it.
Not me,
Ellie said, moving toward him. The doorbell rang again.
Brittany,
Julia said. The name tasted bitter on her tongue, or perhaps it was more than that. Perhaps it was the taste of true fear, and she hadn't known it until now.
I think she lived in the forest for a long time. Years, maybe. If she did, your wife may have been held there also. Whoever took them might have left evidence behind.
George went very still.
You think Brittany could lead us there?
Maybe,
Ellie answered. Julia could barely manage a nod.
Is it safe? For Brittany, I mean.
Julia couldn't have answered that question, not even for Alice. Her throat was too full of tears.
This is wrong, even if it's for the right reason, she thought.
Julia won't let her see the actual site, if we find it, that is. Ellie's gaze was steady.
You asked me to do my job, George. Was that another lie?
Julia drew in a sharp breath. The room felt full of words unspoken, fear denied. A guilty man would say no.
Okay,
he finally said.
But we go tomorrow. No dragging it out.
Julia honestly didn't know how to feel.
Okay.
The word was barely louder than a whisper.
And no media, Ellie said.
George looked from one of them to the other, as if trying to gauge their honesty.
Okay, for now.
The doorbell rang again. There was pounding on the door.
Hide,
Ellie said sharply to George, who stumbled into the kitchen and crouched behind the cabinets.
Come with me, she said to Julia.
The two of them walked to the door, opened it. There were several reporters on the front steps, including Mort from the Gazette. They were already talking when the door opened.
We're here to interview George Azell. We know that's his car. Can you confirm that the Wolf girl is his missing daughter? Dr. Cates, have you cured the wild child? Is she speaking now?
Julia stared out at the faces in front of her, feeling distant from them, disconnected. Only a few months ago she would have given anything to be asked the last question, to be able to answer it in the affirmative. Then, the reformation of her reputation meant everything to her. But now, her world was infinitely different. She felt Ellie's gaze on her. No doubt her sister was thinking the same thing. Julia looked out at the reporters who were staring at her, microphones at the ready, willing now to believe her. She could be the one again, the doctor to whom they listened. She knew it was true. Alice could be her living proof, just as she was George's. All she had to do was use Alice, show the tapes, and then present the girl. The progress they'd made was nothing short of miraculous. The journals would be clamoring for articles on her therapy techniques. In the end, after all the times she dreamt of her triumphant return, it was surprisingly easy to smile coolly and say, "No comment." Ellie, Cal, Earl, Julia, and Alice were in the park. They needed to set out before dawn.
There could be no witnesses to this trek of theirs. A media trail would ruin everything. George stood apart from the rest of them, his arms crossed, talking to his lawyer.
"Can she do it?" Cal asked, voicing everyone's concern.
Ellie had no answer to that. "I don't even know what to hope for." She reached out for Cal, held his hand. The warmth and familiarity of his touch made her breathe easier. She had been up most of the night, going through procedural manuals and emailing law enforcement colleagues around the country. She'd put together an evidence-gathering kit and invited Cal along to be their official photographer. Everything had to be done exactly right. If they actually found anything, she needed to preserve the site for county and maybe even federal crime scene investigators. It was dark and quiet out here. Cold. The icy breath of late January scraped their skin and chapped their lips. They'd been here beneath the maple tree for almost a half hour. In all that time, no one had said a word, except Julia, who was kneeling in front of Alice. In the darkness, they all looked like apparitions. Alice most of all, with her black hair and dark coat and red boots.
"Scared,"
she gave a half-hearted growl. "I know, honey. I'm scared, too. So is Aunt Ellie. But we need to see where you were before. Remember what we talked about? Your place in the woods?"
"Dark,"
Alice whispered. Ellie heard Alice's whimper, her trembling voice, and she wanted to stop this thing right now. How could they do this?
"No leave, Alice?"
"No," Julia said. "I'll hold your hand all the time." Alice sighed. It was a harrowing, heart-wrenching sound.
"Kay."
Behind them, a car drove up. It was the final member of their party. Ellie walked over to the sidewalk, where Peanut and Floyd now stood alongside a game farm truck. Beside them, on a leash, was the wolf, muzzled.
"You sure about this?"
Floyd asked.
"I'm sure."
Ellie took the leash from him.
"Wolf!"
Alice cried out, running for them. The wolf jumped at Alice, knocked her down.
"Are you going to bring him back?"
Floyd asked, watching the pair play on the icy grass.
"I don't think so. He belongs in the wild."
Floyd's gaze landed on Alice.
"I wonder if he's the only one."
Then he walked back to his truck and drove away. Ellie looked down at her watch, then went to her sister, who stood alone now, staring into the forest.
"It's time."
Julia closed her eyes for a moment and drew in a deep breath. Releasing it, she went to Alice and knelt down.
"We need to go now, Alice."
Alice pointed to the muzzle and the leash.
"Bad. Trap. Smelly."
Ellie exchanged a worried look with her sister. Last night, they'd decided to use the wolf to help Alice find her way back to her old life. It had seemed less dangerous in the abstract.
"She needs him," Julia said.
"Okay, but I've got to keep the muzzle on." Ellie bent down and unhooked the leash. The wolf immediately nuzzled up against Alice.
"Cave, wolf,"
the girl whispered, and off they went, the two of them, toward the woods.
"Tell me that's not a damned wolf,"
George said, coming up to Ellie.
"Let's go,"
was Ellie's answer. By the time the sun crested the trees, they were so far from town that the only noise was their footsteps crunching through the underbrush and the silvery bells of the river rushing alongside them. No one had spoken in more than an hour. In a ragged formation, with Julia and Alice and the wolf in the lead, they kept moving, deeper and deeper into the woods. The trees grew denser here, and taller, their heavy boughs blocking out most of the light. Every now and then, sunlight slanted through to the forest floor. It looked solid, that light, so dappled with motes that you weren't entirely sure you could walk through it. And still they went on, toward the heart of this old-growth forest, where the ground was spongy and always damp, where club mosses hung from leafless branches like ghostly sleeves. A pale gray mist clung to the ground, swallowing them all from the knees down. Around noon, they stopped in a tiny clearing for lunch. Ellie didn't know about everyone else, but she was uneasy out here. They seemed so small, this band of theirs. It would be too easy to make a wrong turn and simply disappear. The only noise now was the ever-constant breeze. It brushed thousands of needles overhead. They heard the rustling long before they felt the cool touch of the wind on their cheeks. They sat in a rough circle, clustered at the base of a cedar tree so big that they could all hold hands and not make a complete circle around its trunk.
"Where are we?"
George asked, stretching out one leg. Cal unfolded his map.
"Best guess? Well past the Hall of Mosses in the park. Not far from Wonderland Falls, I think. Who knows, a lot of this area isn't surveyed."
"Are we lost?"
George asked. "She's not," Ellie said, getting to her feet again. "Let's go." They walked for another few hours, but it was slow going. Thick undergrowth and curtains of hanging moss blocked their way. At a clearing beneath a quartet of giant trees, they made camp for the night, pitching their day-glow orange pup tents around the fire. All the while, as they set up camp and cooked their supper from cans, no one said much of anything. By nightfall, the sounds of the forest were overwhelming. There was endless scurrying and dropping and cawing. Only Alice and her wolf seemed at ease. Here, in all this green murkiness, Alice moved easier, walked taller. It gave them all a glimpse of who she would someday become, when she felt at home in the world of people. Long after everyone else had gone to bed, Ellie stayed up. Sitting by the river's edge, she stared out at the black woods, wondering how Alice had made this trek alone. She heard a twig snap behind her, and she turned. It was Julia, looking worn and tired.
"Is this the Insomniac's meeting place?"
Ellie scooted sideways, making room for her sister on the moss-furred nurse log. On either side of them, fragile green sword ferns quivered at the movement of their bodies. They sat side by side. At their feet, the river rushed by, almost invisible in the darkness. The night air smelled rich and green. Overhead, the Milky Way appeared in patches between the trees and clouds.
"How's Alice doing?"
Ellie asked. It flashed through her mind that soon they'd have to start calling her Brittany. Another in a long line of things they didn't want to face.
"Sleeping peacefully. She's completely at ease out here.
It's her hometown, I guess. Her own backyard.
Is she leading us somewhere, or just walking?"
"I don't know."
"I hope we're doing the right thing."
Julia's voice cracked on that. They fell silent, both of them questioning their choices. Ellie wanted to avoid talking about George, but out here, where there was nothing but her and her sister and the night sky, it was easy to see things more clearly.
"Have you seen how George looks at her?"
Ellie said the words quietly, in case he was awake and listening. Hopefully the sound of the river would drown out their voices.
"Yes," Julia answered.
There was a pause before she said,
"He looks like a man with a broken heart. Every time she ignores him or turns away, he winces."
"It's making me nervous. What if we find—"
"I know."
Julia leaned against her.
"Whatever happens, Elle, I couldn't have handled it without you."
Ellie slipped an arm around her baby sister and drew her close.
"Yeah, me too."
Behind them, a twig snapped. Ellie jerked around. George stood there, his hands jammed in his pockets.
"I couldn't sleep," he said, walking toward them.
Ellie studied him. I guess only Alice can.
George stared out at the forest. Quietly, not looking at them, he said,
I'm afraid of what we'll find.
If it was an act, it was Oscar-worthy. Ellie glanced at Julia and saw the worry in her sister's eyes. So Julia saw it, too.
Yeah, Ellie finally said, tightening her hold on Julia. We're all afraid.
Ellie woke at dawn and started the fire. In a heavy silence, they ate breakfast and broke down camp. By first light, they were on their way again, fighting through deeper, denser undergrowth, pushing through spider webs as taut as fishing wire. It was just past noon when Alice stopped suddenly. In this shadowy world of towering, centuries-old trees and ever-present mist, the little girl looked impossibly small and afraid. Looking at Julia, she pointed upriver.
No, Alice, go!
Julia picked Alice up, held her tightly.
You're a very brave little girl.
To Ellie, she said, Make good notes and take pictures. I need to know everything, and be careful. Julia carried Alice over to the base of a behemoth cedar tree. They sat down on the soft carpet of moss at its feet. The wolf padded to their side and lay down. Ellie looked ahead, into the green and black shadows that lay ahead. Cal, Earl, George, and his lawyer came up beside her, one by one. No one said a word. It took a surge of courage to move forward, to lead them all deeper into the woods. But she did it. They followed the river around a bend and over a hill, and found themselves in a man-made clearing. Stumps created a perimeter. Fallen logs were the boundaries. Empty tin cans were everywhere, lying on the hard ground, their silvery sides furred by moss and mold. There were hundreds of them, years' worth. Old magazines and books and other kinds of garbage lay in a heap beside the cave. Not far away, tucked back in a grove of red cedar trees, was a small shake lean-to with no door. To the left, a dark cave yawned at them, its open mouth decorated with ferns that grew at impossible angles, their lacy fronds fluttering in the breeze. In front of it, a shiny silver stake had been driven into the ground. A nylon rope lay coiled around it. One end was attached to the stake by a metal loop. Ellie knelt by the stake. At the end of the ragged nylon rope was a leather cuff that had been chewed off. The cuff was small, just big enough to encircle a child's ankle. Black blotches stained the leather. Blood. She closed her eyes for a split second and wished she hadn't. In the darkness of her thoughts, she saw little Alice staked out here. It had been the girl's small, bare feet that had worn the circular groove in the dirt. How long had she been out here, going round and round this stake? Cal bent down beside her, touched her. She waited for him to say something, but he just squeezed her shoulder. Slowly, Ellie pushed to her feet. Gloves on, everyone. Then she made the mistake of looking at George.
Jesus, he said, his face pale, his mouth trembling. Someone tied her up like a damn dog? How?
Don't.
Ellie could feel the tears streaking down her cheeks. It was unprofessional, but inevitable.
Let's go, she said to Cal.
In a silence so thick it was hard to walk through and harder to breathe in, Ellie conducted her first true crime scene search. They found a pile of women's clothes, a single red patent leather high heel, a blood-spattered knife, a box of half-finished dream catchers, and a small ratty baby blanket, so dirty they couldn't be certain what color it had once been. Appliqué daisies hung askew from the trim. When George saw the blanket, he made a strangled, desperate sound.
Oh, my God.
Ellie didn't dare look at him. She was hanging on by a thread here. If the look on George's face matched the sound of his voice, she'd lose it.
Catalog everything, Earl, she said.
Behind the lean-to was another stake, with another leather ankle strap. This one was bigger. It, too, was caked with dried blood. Someone else had been staked out here. An adult.
Zoe. She couldn't even see her daughter,
Ellie whispered. Zoe's rope was longer. It allowed her to reach the mattress in the lean-to.
Cal touched her again. Keep moving.
She nodded, hearing the thickness in his voice. It matched the stinging in her eyes. She moved forward slowly, studying everything from the pile of junk by an old moss-furred stump to the dirty, stained mattress that lay between two Douglas firs. There were animal signs everywhere. This camp had been vacant for a long time. The scavengers had come in. Back in the trees, not far from the dirty mattress, Ellie found an old trunk, rusted almost shut. It took her a few tries, but she finally opened it. Inside, she found piles of old Spokane newspaper clippings. Most of them were about prostitutes who'd disappeared from the city streets and never been found. The last clipping was dated November 7, 1999. There were also several guns and a blood-encrusted arm sling. Down at the bottom, buried beneath the bandages and newspapers and dirty silverware, was a yellow plastic raincoat and a ratty Batman baseball cap. Behind her, George let out an anguished cry.
He saw it. That flower delivery guy saw the kidnapper parked in front of my house.
Ellie didn't turn around. She couldn't see George right now, but she heard him drop to his knees in the muddy dirt.
If they listened, maybe they could have found him before he did this. Oh, my God.
When he started to cry, Ellie closed her eyes. She'd done her job, found the truth. But it wasn't the truth she'd wanted to find. Alice's heart is pounding in her chest. She knows she should run, but she can't leave Julie. Still, she hears the voices here, the leaves and the trees and the river. These are the sounds she remembers, and though there is fear in her chest, there is something else, something that makes her get to her feet. Wolf brushes up against her, loving her. Not far away, his pack is standing together, waiting for his return. This Alice knows. She can hear their padding footsteps and growling at one another. These are the sounds below, softer than the rustling leaves and the rushing water, the sounds of life that fill all this darkness. She bends down. It takes a long time, but she finally frees Wolf from the smelly, icky trap on his face and around his neck. He looks up at her in perfect understanding. She feels sad at the thought of losing him again, but a wolf needs his family.
Fwee,
she whispers. He howls and licks her face.
Bye,
she whispers. Then he is gone. Alice looks back up at Julie, feeling such a swelling in her heart that it almost hurts. She knows what she wants to tell Julie, but she doesn't have the words. She takes Julie's hand, leads her well around the place. She doesn't want to see the cave again. Oh, no! They climb over one of the trees him cut down and push through a patch of stinging nettles. There it is, a mound in the earth, covered with stones.
Mommy,
Alice says, pointing to the rocks. It is a word she thought she'd forgotten. Once, long ago, her mommy had kissed Alice the way Julie does and tucked her into a bed that smelled like flowers. Or maybe these are dreams. She can't be sure. She remembers a glimpse, a moment. Her bending down, kissing Alice, whispering,
Be good for Mommy. Remember her.
Oh, baby.
Julie pulls Alice into her arms and holds her tightly, rocking her back and forth. Alice wishes her eyes would water like a real girl's. But there is something wrong with her. Her heart hurts so much she can hardly stand it.
Love, Julie, she says.
Julie kisses Alice just the way the mommy used to.
I love you too.
Alice smiles. She is safe now. She closes her eyes and falls asleep. In her dreams, she is two girls. Big girl Alice, who knows how to count with her fingers and use her words to make herself understood. On the other side of the river is baby Brittany, wearing the pants called diapers and playing with her red ball. The old mommy is there with her, waving goodbye. Alice knows she is sleeping. She knows, too, that in the world where she is only Alice, she is in Julie's arms. And she is safe. Julia stood beneath the maple tree in South Park with Alice asleep in her arms. No one had told her where to go or what to do after the search and rescue team dropped them off at the fire station. And yet, somehow, she and George had ended up here, like shells washed ashore, at this place where the search had begun. The whop, whop, whop of the helicopters and the peal of the sirens were finally fading away.
What now? George asked, looking dazed and confused, as if he weren't really waiting for an answer.
I don't know. Ellie is going back to the crime scene tomorrow with all kinds of experts.
Did you hear what he did to my baby? How he tied her like a dog and...
Stop. Julia turned to him, seeing the pain in his eyes, the tears. They didn't have all the facts yet. There were tests to run and results to wait for, but all of them knew the truth. George hadn't done this to his family. I'm sorry, George. She wanted to say more, but couldn't. She felt as if she were made of chalk and crumbling away bit by bit.
I guess we'll talk later, when it all fades.
I don't think it will fade for us, George, but yes, later would be good. Right now, I better get my girl home. Despite her best intentions, her voice caught on that. My girl. Our girl, I mean. He reached out cautiously, touched Alice's back. His dark hand looked huge between her shoulder blades.
I never stopped loving her.
Julia closed her eyes. She couldn't think about this now, or she'd fall apart. With a mumbled apology, she turned away from him and walked briskly toward her truck. She was almost to the sidewalk when she saw Max. Light from the nearby street lamp cascaded down on him, made his hair look silvery white. His face was all shadows. Slowly he crossed the street toward her. His boot heels were loud on the worn, bumpy asphalt. Each step matched the beating of her heart. He moved in close, the way lovers did. Are you okay? Try as she might, she couldn't stop the tears from flooding her eyes.
No.
He took Alice from her and put the sleeping child in her car seat. Then he did the only thing he could do. He took Julia in his arms and let her cry. By the time Ellie finished writing her report and sending out faxes and emailing the right agencies, she was exhausted. She pushed away from her desk, sighing heavily. It was only 10 o'clock, but it felt much later. There was nothing more she could do tonight, so she got up slowly and walked through the station, turning off lights as she went. The off-site 911 service was probably besieged with questions. It was something she'd deal with tomorrow. Outside,
The night was still and quiet. A slight breeze tugged at her hair and made the fallen leaves dance along the rough sidewalk. She was almost to her cruiser when she noticed George. He was leaning against a street lamp. He wore no coat. He must be freezing. She went to him. He didn't look up at her approach. Ellie had never been good with words, and none came to her now. He looked at her.
All the big city cops who followed me around, and it was you who found the truth.
I had Alice, Ellie remembered a moment too late, Brittany. He leaned down and kissed her on the lips. It wasn't a romantic kiss, but still, she felt its impact. In other days, other times, this feeling would have been enough to make her reach for him, to deepen the kiss into something. Now, instead, she drew back.
Thank you, he whispered.
It doesn't change everything, she said, hearing the crack in her own voice. Alice needs my sister. Without her...
She's my daughter. Can you understand that?
Ellie's voice, when it finally arrived, was barely there. This was the place truth had sent them. Yeah, I know. 25. By 3 o'clock the next day, all of the major network and cable news channels were interrupting regularly scheduled broadcasts to report on the discovery of Zoe Azell's body in the deep woods of Washington State. Crime lab analysis had confirmed her identity, as well as that of the man who'd been there, too. His name was Terrence Speck, and he'd had a long history of problems with the law. He'd been convicted of first-degree rape twice. He'd also been a suspect in all those Spokane prostitute disappearances a few years ago, but no solid evidence had ever turned suspicion into probable cause. He'd been killed in September, a hit-and-run accident on Highway 101. Every newspaper and radio station and television show proclaimed George Azell's innocence. The jury system had failed, they said. A man everyone from waitresses to senators had blown off as a guilty son of a bitch had been innocent. Pundits from court TV, especially Nancy Grace, who'd called him a vicious sociopath with a killer smile, were busy wiping the egg from their made-up faces. Now George stood at the podium in the police station with his lawyer. They'd been answering the same questions all afternoon. The revelation that the Wolf Girl, so easily discarded as sensationalism by them only a few weeks before, was his daughter, only fueled the fire. The headline, Living Proof, was even now being inked across millions of newspapers. Ellie stood at the back wall, shoulder to shoulder between